Blog Talk Radio.
Everybody's got the fever. This is something we all know. Fever isn't such a new thing. Fever started long ago.
Good evening and welcome to Lenny Godfrey's Straight No Chaser. I wasn't even going to let that song play any longer because I want every single minute we have on air to talk to my guest tonight. We have such a magnificent woman here tonight. I have personal experience about her magnificence that we will go into in a little while. But before we do that, I want to be able to tell you all the information that you need to know about if you want to hear this again, if you want to dial in and speak to our guest tonight. First, you are on blogtalkradio.com/S as in Sam, F as in Fred, T as in Tom, H as in Harry, and the number 2. If you want to call in and say something this evening, you dial 516-453-6063. Now, if you really have a great time and you want to hear this again, or you're inspired to hear other episodes, because we're almost up to 90 now in public episodes, then you can then go on blogtalkradio.com and the /SFTH2, and then you will be able to see all of the variety of archived episodes that we have thus far. Now, you know that we have really spent I'm almost on my 2-year mark. Almost 2 years ago, at the end of March, my first public episode was with a wonderful, wonderful, the first really ABC Black anchor, Melba Tolliver. And if I can convince her again, hopefully she's coming back for our anniversary. And it's been an absolute wonderful 2 years of listening and talking to people who I think have really contributed to the arts and have in their own right been luminaries and lit up the stages, the screens, the radio, so many things. And tonight, I have someone with me who I haven't known for a very long time. We talked off air, and we met a little bit ago, but we didn't really know one another. And because of a good friend who is also in my nonprofit organization, Essence of Acting, Miss Julia Lima, I was told that I might enjoy a class of movement that this woman conducts many times a week. And I tell you, I went there and I was enraptured with not only her technique, her experience, her discipline, her professionalism, all of those things wrapped up into one. And that's just about the class. We won't talk about her 20 years of dancing and performing on Broadway that we are going to be talking about. This woman is absolutely incredible. And then she went on to be, after dancing 20 years on Broadway, she went on to be the executive artistic director of the Youth Theater in Interactions, Inc. And that's YTI. And then she decided there's more that she wanted to give back. She wanted to teach movement and instill the arts back into seniors. So she started doing a class for that. And now she has even a more interesting class. I will call it, and I'm going to tell her to talk about it, that the boot camp. Oh, my goodness. The experience of that will take you to another place. All of this in one person. And if you have not seen, if you have not been on YouTube to see the excerpt of her doing the number from Chicago, you really must, Everything is so sharp. Every muscle in her back shows she's just exquisite. And this, with this, I will say and I will introduce Miss Mamie Duncan Gibbs. Hello, Mamie. Say hello.
Hi, Lenny. Hi, everyone. Wow, you make me excited to know me. It's like, ooh, I want to know who I am.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, my dear. It has been a pleasure these few months that I have been weekly and biweekly most of the time visiting with you in class, watching you as you so expertly just lead us to a place where we are comfortable with movement. And if you haven't moved for a while, if you have moved all your life, you've rekindled that love for it. So many wonderful Broadway performers are in the classes. You are just a Pied Piper, I think.
Oh, thank you so much. I'm having such a good time. And I feel like I'm just working out with friends, you know. It's like,
yes,
let's help each other stay healthy. And that's what I feel like I'm doing.
Yes. But before all of that, now we're going to get to that, because I tell you, by the end of this, I would say to people, if you're, because you have people in California, you have people that tune in from all over the country, and those classes,
mm-hmm.
some of those classes are early, some classes are in the afternoon. I would say to people, you know, Mamie will tell you when what time of her classes are, that you're welcome to just kind of take a look in. I would say don't turn down the opportunity, because she's absolutely fabulous. But you're welcome. To get this fabulous, she had a journey. And this journey started outside Springfield, Massachusetts. Now, we have many people in common, so you're going to hear us holler and scream about people that she studied with, she's worked with, and all that have interwoven into both of our lives. But you started with a man who I did not meet until I was on Broadway. And then again, people said, you have to come to this man's class.
That 3:30 class, huh?
Yes.
Was it 3:30?
No, it had to be a little bit earlier, because I was able to go home and rest a little bit before the show, because I was on, I would do it every once in a while we were open on Broadway.
Oh, wow. Wow.
So, I mean, but it was to just, for him to teach you how to walk across the stage.
Yes. Well, you know what? I learned how to perform before I even learned how to dance working with Frank Hatchett. He was amazing.
And what we're talking about is Frank Hatchett. He was just a man, and so endearing and kind and never critical, mm-hmm. never screaming, never always patient. I mean, you know, I came in there as a person who moved well. And he said, no, I'm going to teach you how to, you're going to take over that stage. And by the time I would walk on the, people would say, well, where have you been, Miss Singh?
Right. Well, his classes were always so wonderful. And it was just a celebration. You felt like you were performing in the class, but it was fun. And like you said, it was nurturing. It was loving. And we cheered each other on, you know, going across the floor was amazing. And, you know, I remember once he made me go first. I thought I was going to die, but I got through it. And I said, oh, okay.
Well, you know what that meant. That meant you know what you were doing. So everybody had to watch you. Now, wait.
Right.
Now, that was before. When you say, when did you first meet Frank? Let's go back to when you first met
him. I started with acrobatic class in Springfield, Massachusetts. I was 11 years old. So almost 50 years ago. And I went to an acrobatic class, and he was larger than life, and a friend of mine convinced me to come, and I went and never left. I was doing one class, and I laughed because I would literally go at 9:30 in the morning. Class started at 10, so I wanted to be on time. And then I would stay until after 11, because class was over at 11, but then I would stay and practice because they had better mats than what I had at home. So I would stay till about 2 o'clock practicing my flips, my leaps, my jumps, and just, you know, falling down, getting back up, banging, falling. And I laughed because I learned so much just from being there around Frank and these dancers that were just amazing. Mm-hmm. It was amazing. It was just this little safe haven that I knew nothing about until I walked into that community center at 11 years old.
That's amazing. And you studied with him all the way through college?
I kept going through high school. And actually, I did acrobatics for about 4 years. And my fifth year, he said, you know, you walk like a duck. You should take ballet. And I was like, huh? And he convinced my mother to let me take ballet, jazz, tap, and African dance for a year. Mm-hmm. And I'll never forget, because I went from doing one class to doing all of those, and where my costume was $15 for one class, I'll never forget that first year doing all those classes, it went to $91, and I got yelled at. My mother was like, what do you mean $91? I said, well, there's a lot of classes I'm taking, and he let me take them for free. And I mean, yes, he introduced me, and looking back, I said, this man saved my life. Because I can't begin to tell you the other opportunities that were going on around town. And being able to go to this community center and dance all day. And, you know, then I started going Wednesdays all day after school, and then Saturdays all day. And then we started doing performances. And he gave me such a sense of pride and a sense of just knowing who I was. You know,
yes.
And I looked back, and he did that for so many of us. He saved our community. He saved our community.
It was a haven. It was a place where people, I remember in class, or while I was on Broadway and then afterwards, there would be people who would come in on the train from Long Island just to just to take a class. And I go, now, what are you doing? Oh, no, I got to catch my train. I got to get back home. I said, where's home? Long Island? I mean, he just... You have that quality, like Frank. He was a Pied Piper. You wanted to be in his presence. There wasn't. Mm-hmm. There was a look that he could give you.
I got that look. I got that look many times.
And when you were not doing, he was like, "Oh, I know you can do better than that now." You know that, and you would go, "Oh, well, all right." You know, but
right.
The inspiration was absolutely wonderful. So now that leads me. My God, I love Frank Hatchett, and I love your tribute to him in one of the pieces that we do all the time. I would do it all day long, that little thing. That leads me to when you bring up your mother, who is I'm hoping we'll have an opportunity to hear this, who you talk about and whose brother was in class today. Thank you very much.
Right. She doesn't even know that. I haven't had a chance to speak to her yet. But, yeah, her baby brother, her 88-year-old baby brother, came to class today. And he said, well, I'll be there Friday, too. My Uncle Calvin, yeah.
That was fabulous. So tell me, when you say, she said, what, $91, how did your family receive your discovery of the arts at this point? And how was that different than what? If it was different than what they wanted you to do, as far as
This goes way back. Dancing was not allowed in my house. My mother is very religious, and I grew up in a very religious household. We couldn't play cards. We couldn't dance. There were certain things we weren't allowed to do, but you know, as soon as we were out the house, those were the things we did best, right?
Yes.
Because when they weren't looking, we learned how to play rummy and tonk and everything else. But dancing really wasn't allowed in the house. It was looked at as sin. But the acrobatics was more of gymnastics, so that was really more exercise as opposed to dance. And my cousin, now I don't even know if you know this man, was my cousin, Clinton King. Do you remember Clinton King?
Yes.
Yeah, Clinton was my cousin. And he came over and he convinced my mother that dancing was really wonderful, and she should let me do it, and he would watch out for me. So, you know, he kind of helped push me along in that sense. But I was really the worst dancer in my family, and they still tease me to this day. I have a sister who's since passed on, Kathy, and I'll never forget when she came to see me in Chicago when I was starring. She came backstage, and she said, I can't believe people pay to see you dance. I said, I know, right? And we just fell out laughing. Because when I was little, I really could not dance. And there's still certain things that I'm not good at. But I love theater because it's so technical. You know,
yes.
There's technique involved, and I'm still not a great street dancer. If you start talking hip hop or street pop locking, I can't do that stuff.
All that stuff. No. It's so very interesting because I grew up in a household that was similar. My mother was Pentecostal. And listening to the radio was really a privilege that we had in the morning only because it told us what the time was and how we had to get out in order to meet the bus to school.
Uh-huh.
But there was no music. There were no card playing. There was no anything except for the fact that I could take voice lessons from Dr. Northern, who was also the choir director at church and at Carnegie Hall.
Mm.
So that's how we all skirted it a little bit when our families were very, very strict and religious. So that's how you kind of started. What was the reaction then, as you said, when when Frank said, okay, you need to take the ballet and the jazz and the African, and you started really veering toward that and decided instead of a commitment to the college, you weren't going to go dance Broadway. What made you feel like that? Why?
Well, I'll tell you, we did a production of The Wiz as a dance recital. The Wiz is a wow, he called it. And I felt alive on stage for the first time. And going back, I actually played clarinet from 4th grade to 10th grade. So I was always reading music, involved in the music. And I also sang in the church choir. And when we did this production, I played Aunt Em and Eveline. And that was the first time everything I loved came together. I was able to dance. I was able to sing. I was reading music. There was so much going on, and I just felt alive. And all those things, you know, kids love to tease kids. So all the things I got teased about as a kid were magical on stage. My long arms were all of a sudden beautiful. You know, mm-hmm. My very expressive face, my large features were gorgeous from the back of the house. And I said, oh, I'm pretty. Oh, okay, I like this. You know, and I just love the theater. So for years, I thought I was going to be a gym teacher. That was, mm-hmm. that's mm-hmm. what I felt my calling was. I love sports. I love fitness. That's always been a part of my life. But once we did that play, I said, oh, I've got to do this. And I had people around me in my neighborhood, and they said, well, you know, everybody thinks they're going to go to New York. What if you don't make it? What if you don't? I said, well, then I'll find out, but I'm going to try. And mm-hmm. that's kind of been my motto for living is I got to try. If I don't make it, then I'll do something else. But why wonder what could have been? Why not go for it? And I never wanted to have to look back and go, oh, I should have done this. Or if only I had tried that, maybe my life would be like this. I thought, you know what? If I do it and I succeed, great. And if I don't, then I'll know. And I'll go do something else. But I never wanted to sit around that kitchen table talking about what I should have been or what I could have been or what I should have done. I thought, I'm going to go for it. And we'll see what happens.
And going for it. And going for it, ladies and gentlemen, she did. Let me just say, you were in Sweet Charity. You were in Jelly's Last Jam, Chicago, Kiss Me, Kate, Cats, Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat, Radio City Music Hall, the Christmas shows, and the Easter shows. And that's just naming a few. And Sweet Charity. I'm amazed.
I did the national tour with Bob Fosse.
Mm-hmm.
And Donna McKechnie, Lenora mm-hmm. Nimitz, and Stephanie Pope were our three leads. And I was in the ensemble. And mm-hmm. it was amazing. I felt like when I worked with Bob, I had graduated college. It was just so wonderful. And we spent 2 months in Toronto at the Royal Alexandria Theatre. And I'll never forget, I was in the ensemble, and he would call rehearsal for the leads, and I would go to rehearsal. And I'd put my little baseball cap on, and I'd sit in the last row of the orchestra, and I'd sink down, and I'd just watch him direct. And I knew he was going to be a wonderful choreographer, you know, because we knew all the work he had done. But I never knew how incredible a director he would be. And I learned so much. And I was shocked that nobody else was there because, you know, at the theater, you didn't have to be there until half hour. But for me, it was free school. And he was a master. And I thought, how could you be around Bob Fosse and not take advantage of being in his presence? So I would go to every rehearsal. And the wonderful thing is I did at one point have an opportunity to play the role of Helene. And when the director would direct us, I wasn't really listening to him. I was hearing Bob's voice in my ear from all those times I sat in those rehearsals. And it was wonderful because I got to apply everything that I heard him say. I applied it to my performance. And then being able to do the revival of Chicago with Anne Ranging, it was wonderful because she had so many people that had worked with Bob. And again, I was able to apply all of those things that I had learned from working with him. And I only worked with him for 4 months. Unfortunately, I was in the company where Bob passed away, our opening night in D.C. And I had seen him, and I'm pretty sure this is in the book too, but I had seen he and Gwen as I went into the theater. It was about 6 o'clock, and I would go at 6 o'clock because I didn't want to vocalize in the hotel because I knew I was loud and I didn't want to disturb the neighbors, and I figured folks were paying money. So I would get to the theater early, and I saw he and Gwen coming out of the theater, this alleyway of the National Theater in Washington, and I said, hi, I'll see you later. He said, all right, have a great opening. I said, thank you. And I found out later that he actually collapsed on the street right around the corner.
Oh, my God.
So, yeah, and I'm just so grateful that I had an opportunity to work with him because he really was a master.
Oh, yeah. When you are blessed with those people who are that gifted, that is something. Mm-hmm. That's something that never leaves you. It never leaves you. So tell me of if you can, because it's a hard thing. What are one of your favorite moments in the theater at this point? What's one of your favorites?
One of my favorites. Oh, gosh. Okay.
I didn't say your favorite. I didn't say your favorite.
No, you said one of them. Yep.
Yes, but I know with a resume like that, there are some opportunities that are absolutely that's just absolutely wonderful. So you might not be able to single it out. But one.
Yeah, but one of my favorites actually was during the run of Chicago, and we were in previews. It was in November of 1996, and I remember because we had been doing a lot of publicity for the show. I was one of the Cell Block Tangle girls, and I had promised my children, I said, Mommy has tomorrow off. We're going to spend the day together. That was Election Day, and I remember we came to the theater that Monday. We had a Monday night show during previews, and they sat us down, and they said, we need to talk to you. And I thought, oh, brother, I just left Cats. This show is closing. You know, before we opened, I got real nervous. And they said, we have to cancel the show tonight. And we're like, what? What's going on? And Anne Ranking had lost her voice. So there was one understudy, a standby for her, Nancy Hess, for her and Bebe Neuwirth. And Nancy was already on for Annie, and Bebe had twisted her ankle, and they canceled the show. And I was like, oh, my God. You know, and people are looking. We're going, oh, my God. And, you know, somebody said, are we still getting paid? They're like, yes, you're getting paid. And I'm sitting there going, holy crap, this is crazy, because I had auditioned for the understudy, and I didn't get it because they said, well, you know, the 6 Cell Block Tango women, you're so strong, we want to keep you there. We're going to just have an outside person be the understudy, the second standby for Bebe, because we want to keep you together. And I went to the producers and the director, Walter Bobby. I said, you guys make me sick. And they said, what? I said, you make me sick. I said, look, I know my audition was fabulous. Well, I did go to the corner and pray first before I opened my mouth. I did say, Lord, okay, if I open my mouth, you got to help me here. I said, you make me sick. And they're like, what are you talking about? I said, well, I know my audition was great. I can have a show for you. I said, all right, I can give you till midnight tonight, and I can give you all day tomorrow. We can have a Wednesday matinee. Now, I had promised my kids we'd have that Tuesday together, and I'm telling them, okay, I can give you all day tomorrow. And I'm going, oh, Lord, what am I saying? And Walter Bobby said, okay. And Barry Weisler you know, I knew they were kind of caught between a rock and a hard place because we're talking money. You had to cancel a Broadway show. That meant you had to reimburse people. And I felt like if I didn't say something, I would miss this opportunity. And it was one of those moments where I said, if I don't say something, I'm going to spend the rest of my life going, I should have said something. What if I had said this? Maybe this would have happened. Long story short, they came back in an hour. I went upstairs in the meantime. I vocalized. I stretched. I hit notes that I still can't hit. And they came back, and in an hour, I auditioned. I sang through the show, and the way the show is set up, we sat along the side of the stage, stage right and stage left. We were on stage. Oh, and also I was Mama's understudy. And Mama, and that was a thing too. They told me they wanted to keep us all together, and I couldn't understudy Velma, but yet they wanted me to cover Mama. And I was like, you know. So I said, all right, I'll do it. It's Ann Ranking. I'll be on stage with Ann Ranking. So I realized I knew these lines. So I rehearsed with Walter Bobby for a couple of hours that night till about 11, and then I came in the next morning with the dance captains, Caitlin Carter and Louis Perez, and I literally treated that entire day like an audition. And we just learned every dance. I learned it. I had a script stage right, a script stage left, and the entire company came together. But that Wednesday, they made an announcement, Mamie's going on as Velma, be as helpful as you can. And we all came together and put this show on. And rising up out of that pit as Velma Kelly was amazing. And I'll tell you, I called Frank Hatchett. I said, Frank, I'm getting ready to star on Broadway. I don't know what it's going to look like, but you have to get somebody else to teach that 12:30 class. I need you there. And Frank came and saw me for my first starring role on Broadway as Velma Kelly.
Oh, how wonderful.
Yeah, so that was magical. And I did well. I did well. I didn't have silver shoes, so I said, well, Billy, I thought about it. If I get silver shoes, this is what we should do. But I literally had two people, one on either side of the stage, turning the script for me. And I'd go, and I knew it enough, but, you know, just glancing at it and figuring it out. And we did a show. And then I did it that night, and I did Thursday. And the ironic thing is after I got through Thursday, I had to go through an entire rehearsal period. I could not remember one line after that. You know, I just felt like God picked me up and said, okay, I'm going to give you this. And it was a gift. It was a gift. And then I went on to, you know, then become a real understudy and have rehearsals. And that particular thing for the Today Show, I was still an understudy. And BB did not want to do an early morning Saturday show because she had two shows, and she knew BB was such a professional, and she still is, but she knew people were coming to the show to see her as Velma Kelly, and she didn't want to disappoint. So she opted out of doing the Today Show so she could be, you know, on point for her Broadway shows. And they asked me on Friday, they said, would you like to do the Today Show tomorrow? And I was like, huh? And they sent me home with a backup tape and said, you got to be there 4:30 in the morning and we'll send a car and this is what we'll do. And I was like, yeah. So, you know, 8:30, it was live. So wonderful opportunities, you know, and it's been frightening, but I've learned to do things afraid. Again, because I never wanted to wonder what could have been. And sometimes I'll tell you the truth, I've fallen flat on my face. So I'm one of those persons, I'm really wonderful or I'm terrible. You know, you're going to get one or the other, but you're going to get 100% of something, you know.
Well, I can't even imagine the terrible part, but this story is absolutely incredible. Well, then I have to ask you then, because that's an incredible moment to think about, what moment do you think you did not take? Did you have any of them? Because in your articulation now, it seems that when every opportunity came, you tried to really
I've blown it. I've blown some moments. I did the original company of the Tap Dance Kid on Broadway, the workshop production. And when it went to Broadway, I didn't get it. And I was new to New York, and, you know, I didn't know a lot. I was green, and I trusted certain people. I saw certain things, you know, and I learned from that. I had just gotten my union card, and I said, you know, I can either be bitter or I can learn from this. And I chose to learn from it. And I had to take a step back and say, what could you have done differently? Well, my tap dancing was not that strong. So what I did is I went and I studied privately at Henry Letang.
Okay.
And I went and I said, you know what, I'll never be cut from tap again. And I studied and I worked my butt off. I rented studios at this raggedy place called Faisal's. And folks who are in the business, they know this place. It was a rundown studio on 8th Avenue.
Yes, everybody knows Faisal's.
Yeah, so I would go in and I rented a studio and I worked my butt off. And I'll tell you, that not getting the show actually shaped me in a way that I said, I'll never let there be doubt about what I could do. So, you know, for a second, I was upset. I was depressed for a minute or two, you know. But I said, I've got to learn from this. Otherwise, it's in vain. I don't want this experience to be in vain. And I'm still very good friends with people that I worked with on that show. You know, we're all very good friends. And I learned from that experience. So then when I went on to do other shows, I looked at it as previews to me were opening. Even though, you know, they don't do understudy rehearsals and extra rehearsals until after a show opens officially. But
exactly.
In my mind, I said, once you have a paying audience, that's opening to me. So I would always make sure if I was an understudy, I knew my lines, I knew my part. So that experience taught me to always be ready and stop with excuses. Don't make excuses. Really be honest with yourself. Know what you need to work on. When I first moved to New York, I used to audition, and I was a very good jazz dancer and a good performer, but my ballet was not wonderful. It was not wonderful. And I would go to auditions, and sometimes they would have us do jazz, but a lot of times for musical theater, they would have you do ballet. And then they would keep the bunheads who were wonderful in ballet but couldn't do jazz. And I remember sitting with friends, and I said, you know, they need to, you know, let us do jazz first. And I'm sitting there, you know, my head shaking, and they're not going to get the best. And something inside said, go to ballet class. And I found a ballet class at New York Conservatory of Dance with a bunch of bunheads. I was horrible in the class, so much so that the teacher thought I was a singer because he had seen me do a show, and I sang, so he assumed I was a singer. I didn't want to say, well, I'm really a dancer. I'm just terrible at ballet. But I worked hard, and I still work hard in ballet because once I realized I applied that technique to anything, I was fabulous. So I would be horrible in ballet class, but when I applied it to my jazz, I was wonderful. And when I went to auditions, I could do the tombe, pas de bourrée, glissade, ensemble, second, fourth, back, pirouette, and hold. They gave the same ballet combination everywhere, and once I figured that out, I never got cut again, you know. But I share this with the students that I work with now. I said, look, suffer through. I said, do the work. Whatever is presented to you, whatever opportunity you have, give your all, because you don't know how it's going to affect you later, and you don't want to miss any opportunity. And again, you know, it saved me. And I just thought, don't be afraid of doing the work, and don't be afraid of not being perfect. Do your best. And as long as you do your best, that's good enough. Eventually, you'll perfect it. It'll get better. But all I ask, even from my students, just do your best. That's it.
You know, you always jump the gun for me. I was getting ready to ask you, what would you be talking to the students that you have at Manhattan School of Music? Well, you already told me.
Sorry. And I have such a good time with them. And let me tell you, now that I'm not performing, I love that I get to share all of my stories. I get to share experiences, both good and bad, with them, because this is something that they want to do. They're aspiring to do this. And I get to share all of that and get paid for it.
Yes.
You know, it's wonderful. It's wonderful. And I also love that it's with singers, because now that I'm a little older, I don't want to drop my back. I don't want to slide to the floor. I don't want to do all these things that, you know, you do when you're 35 and you're 40. I don't want to work that hard. But I do work hard with the singers. And again, we share stories. I make sure they know how to have presence on stage. We start the class walking, and I learned that from Frank Hatchett. We walk, start the class, we walk across. I make them walk. I said, now pretend that somebody you like is watching you, but they don't know you know they're watching. So I want you to walk across the floor knowing they're watching you, and you're giving your best self. And we have so much fun. We have a great time. You know, and then we do ballet. And then I take the ballet and I apply it to the jazz so they can see. We spent time on Pas de Bourrée yesterday, and they were like, oh, we did chasse, forward, sideways, Pas de Bourrée, turning, Pas de Bourrée the other way. But just showing them how it applies, and when you apply that technique, it's like learning a scale. You know, everybody wants to get on the piano and just start playing. Well, you have to learn your scales. You have to learn the drills, and it's the same thing, you know, that I work with them on. And I'm excited for them because I see such incredible talent, and I know what I'm giving them is good. And that's exciting, too, when you know that, when you know that you know, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
What's interesting about what you're saying is that the point of view in which you approach your work is really more important than anything else. It is not about, and I say this to young people, it's not about you're getting the job every single time. It's what you do in that room that is your best. That is the most important thing. My father used to say to me, just be your best. Nobody else's best. Your best.
Right. And you know,
you have done your job. That is your job at that point in time. Yeah.
Right. And, you know, I remember once being up for a lead for something, and I didn't get it. And I ran into the director, and he apologized. I said, why? He said, well, because you were so good, but there were four of you that were so good. I was literally, like, trying to match people, and I'm going, oh, my God. And I was pulling my hair out. I said, that's all right. Remember me for the next time. And we laughed, you know. You know, people, sometimes you audition. I've gotten jobs later from auditions I did 2 years earlier.
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah. I think that the most important thing, one of the most important things to pass on to young people and to people who have been in the business for a while is that there are so many components that go into that room that happen when walk into the room. That it's not just the fact that you have the talent to do what it is that they're asking you to do. Then there are all these other things. And so it's really important to have that investment in your career, but it is also important to be well-rounded. So when you can walk out of that room saying, I've done my best, and have something else to go to give you, that gives you that fulfillment in life, that it is not the only thing that you have going for you, because that is the destruction point that happens with people when they don't have anything else. They don't have anything. It doesn't happen.
I tell that with my students. I said, have a balance. Have friends outside of the theater.
Exactly.
You know, have a life outside of the theater. And it's so funny because my husband, I used to only read Backstage and Showbiz and Variety. And I remember he said, you know, you got to have another conversation besides theater. You know, he said, all you do is talk about theater. I said, that's not true. And then I went somewhere with him and I opened my mouth and it was theater. So I said, okay, I'm not going to talk unless it's something other than theater. And I said nothing because I had nothing else to talk about. And I realized it was all I knew. So I started picking up the New York Post. I didn't go to the Times right away. You know, the Post and the Daily News, they kind of gave you the news like gossip, so it was more fun. But I remember when Bill Clinton and Hillary Clinton, well, President Clinton at that time, they came to see Chicago. And I had read something other than the showbiz papers, and I congratulated Hillary Clinton on winning a Grammy. And she said, can you believe it, for reading a book, I won a Grammy? And she sat there and talked to me for about a minute. And then when she went on, someone said, what did you say to her? I said, read the paper. You know, and we laughed. But my husband helped me to expand beyond showbiz. You know, he made me open my eyes and read other things. And I appreciate it. You know, at the time I was mad at him. What do you mean? You know, but I appreciate it because he really helped me to just expand my mind and think outside of the box on so many levels, you know. And
no, go ahead.
I'm sorry. No, I was going to say, and actually I met my husband during that time that I should have been doing the tap dance kid if I had gotten it on Broadway. I actually met my husband during that time, and I thought, you know, all things really do work together for good, because had I been doing the show, I would have never met him.
Mm.
And I thought, wow. You know, but again, it shaped my thinking. But I also, at that time, I met him, and I just thought he was the most wonderful person I had ever met. And it wasn't so much how he treated me, because, you know, guys, if they like you, they're going to treat you nice. But I liked how I watched him treat other people when he
mm-hmm.
didn't know I was looking.
Mm-hmm. It's very
and
important.
And I thought, oh, yeah,
yeah,
you know. And
you want to spend the rest of your life with, yes.
Right. Exactly. You know, he's so kind. And
now, you know, we have about less than 20 minutes left, and I do want to talk about, oh, yes, I told you it goes
fast. I'm teasing.
I want to know what you're going to do, what you're going to be doing, what you think about the business, but I need to hear how you met your husband.
Wow. I met him at a college in Harlem. It was my first time in Harlem at a place called Malcolm King College. I don't even think it still exists. I think it was just a community something they had put together. But a friend of mine, Lori Williamson, who comes on the class, she dances with us every Friday, she asked me if I would come and hear her sing with a couple of friends because she knew I would be honest. She said, I know you'll be honest. You won't just tell me it sounds good. But she asked me if I would come with her, and I said, oh, I'll come with you. Sure. And we went to this college, and my husband was actually playing in the house band that night. He plays guitar. Mm. And I remember standing here going, oh, why am I here? Okay, Lori, hurry up and sing. I got to go. I got rehearsal in the morning, you know. And one of my friends said, if you could talk to anybody in this room, who would you talk to? And I was like, what? She said, anybody in this room, who would you talk to? I said, nobody. And I looked, and I said, oh, he's kind of cute. But so on a break where the band, you know, on hiatus, they were playing the records, literally, and he was over by the concession stand, and this drunk guy, I mean, this is true, this guy comes up and he goes, I'm like, what? And my husband-to-be says, he said, we should be dancing. And I said, oh. And I went back to getting my snacks. And he said, do you want to dance? And I was like, okay. And we started dancing. And I learned about him in four dances, just step touch. We're step touch, and we're just talking and talking. And I knew right then. I said, oh, my God, this is the one. This is the one. He didn't smoke. He didn't drink. He didn't do drugs. He loved music. He was kind. I was like, oh, my God. So they tease me to this day, but I kissed my husband that first night, and they called me heathen all the way home. You didn't even want to come, and here you are kissing somebody. But I knew he was the one. I kissed him, and I saw stars, and he was literally everything that I thought I wanted. And I knew at that point if I didn't marry this man, if somehow it didn't work out, I would spend the rest of my life trying to find someone like him. So I knew I had to get married. You know, I didn't want to lose him. And, you know, we had moments. I went on a cruise ship, and that was nice, too. I actually had a cruise ship job at the time, so I was in rehearsals for the cruise. And I went away for 4 months. I didn't see him for 4 months. And we would talk every Monday and Friday when the ship was in port. I was going from Fort Lauderdale to the Bahamas twice a week. We had a 3-day cruise and a 4-day cruise, if you could call it a cruise, you know, but it was just a quick trip. And we would talk every Monday and Friday, and at one point he said, okay, well, you know, I think we need to break up because his old girlfriend wanted him back. And I said, what? Well, she wants me back. I said, well, I want you to. I said, you know what, I'll see you in 2 weeks. So I quit my job. I quit a job, not having a job, but I said, no, I'm not letting this one go. And I came home, and we were inseparable. We were inseparable after that. So We waited 15 months before we got married because we knew our parents wouldn't approve. And, you know, we just wanted to wait. And we've been married 37 and a half years.
Mamie, what a wonderful story. That's lovely. I love stories. I love great stories about people who find their soulmates, you know. Your life is complete. And that's a very important thing. Now, talking about completion, what you're doing now, you talk like you would not do another show. Would you do another show?
If it was the right show, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. I would love to do another show. I feel like I have one in me. You know, if anybody's listening, Kiss of the Spider Woman. I think Cheetah was about my age when she did it. I would love to do a production of Kiss of the Spider Woman.
Oh.
You know, but yeah, I would do another show. I would do another show if it's the right one. You know, I'm having such a good time doing what I'm doing now that I don't want to leave that. So I actually set up my schedule in such a way that if I got a Broadway show right now, I could still do everything. Isn't that crazy? I would have to take a couple of naps in between. But, you know, I set it up so if I got a show, I could still work with the seniors that I'm working with at the venues that I go to. I could still work at the college. You know, I took classes based around my seniors. They had offered me one class to start, and I did it, and then they offered me four more, and two of them conflicted with my senior classes, so I didn't take them. I said, no, I have a conflict, but I'll do these other two, which is perfect, but I love my senior classes. I have such a good time. I have a 100-year-old woman in one of my classes, and yesterday she came to me and said, you know, I was having a hard time getting out of bed this morning, and, you know, my legs were hurting. And then I thought about what you have us do, and I pulled my knee up to my chest, and I started circling my ankle. And she told me it took her about 30 minutes, but she warmed her body up. And then she came to my 10 o'clock class. And I loved it. I said, thank you. That's what it's about. She said, and you got me moving. And she's 100 years old. Yes. How rewarding is that?
I am telling you. Now, what would you like the audience to know? First of all, I wanted to say to everyone, you've got about 10 minutes. If anyone has, the board is full. If you have any questions, press the number 1, and then I will let you on the air, and you can speak to Mamie. You can ask her a question. You have anything that you want to say, just let me know. I'm going to be looking at the board now. Now, but while we wait for that, if that happens, tell me what gave you the incentive? You say in your bio, you say, and then I thought it was time for me to give back. What made that happen for you?
Well, I'll tell you, I had a moment, I had a moment on stage and during Chicago, and I remember it was a Thursday night, and I was there, and I was thinking, who has grapes on sale? Is it A&P or ShopRite? Because if it's A&P, I got to get them tonight. And if it's ShopRite, I have till Saturday. And I was like, okay, it's time to do something else. It's time to do something. I was on stage. And I knew it was time to do something else. And, I thought about Frank, and I thought about how he made a difference. And I thought, you know, I've always wanted to work with young people. And I was never able to do both at the same time. I had too much going on. And I just felt like it was time to give back. It was time. Right. And I also wanted to give back while I could still do it. I didn't want to come with a cane and say, oh, well, you know, I want to teach the children how to dance. I thought, no, I want to teach them how to dance while I can still dance.
And believe me, you can. Now I have several people who have questions. So let me go to the first one.
Okay.
All right. Hold on. Hello. Tell us your name and where you're from, please.
Hi, this is Daryl Richardson calling. Mamie, what a wonderful, wonderful interview.
Hey, Daryl. How are you?
Yes. I'm listening to you and your stories, and I just wanted to say, so amazing. Some things I just did not know. I loved all the stories that you shared. And that's
basically
awesome.
Thank you. Well, yes. Daryl, don't hang up. Now, Daryl has an incredible story, too. And, Daryl, I have to say this. I used to go to auditions, and Daryl used to come in auditions late and drop her fur coat and turn the dance out. Daryl, I will always remember that about you. And it used to make me laugh because you were always so fabulous in auditions and so much fun. And, you know, we would just support each other through it all and cheer each other on. But I remember that about you.
That is so funny. I love that. That's so funny.
Yeah.
Well, Daryl, thank you so much for listening in this week.
Oh, absolutely.
Yes, thank you so much, Daryl.
Yes, absolutely.
And yes, she is an absolutely wonderful performer. Yes, I've seen her work. Yes, she's fabulous.
Oh,
all right. All right. Now I'm going to go to the next question. Hold on.
Okay.
All righty. Someone is calling in. And hello. Thank you for calling in to Lenny Gaffey Straight No Chaser. And please identify yourself and tell us where you're from. Hello. Yes.
Hello.
There you go.
Hi. This is Julia Lima. How are you doing, Mamie?
Hey, Julia Lima. I'm great. How are you?
I am wonderful. I just
Thanks
wanted
for
to
listening
chime in.
In.
And say, oh, yes. I just wanted to chime in and say how proud of you I am, how wonderful. I've seen you do Chicago and do Velma. I saw you do Kiss Me, Kate, and I'm revitalized from taking your classes, girl. You are
Oh,
me
thank you. Thank you. I love having you in there, too. You know that.
Yes, helping me stay healthy and keep healthy and everything. And Lenny, thank you for this wonderful show that you do every Wednesday. And I'm just going to leave it at that, but I had to chime in. These are two of my favorite women. I want you all to know. Anyway.
Oh,
okay.
We love you too, girl. Thank you.
Thank you.
Love you guys. Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right. We have someone else. No. Maybe no. Maybe I have I think I've done everybody. I think I've done everybody.
Okay.
Wait a minute.
That's wonderful. I love both of those women, and they've inspired me too.
Yes.
And I have to tell you, Daryl actually had a stretch class on Saturdays that inspired me to move forward and share what I do on Zoom.
Mm-hmm.
So she was doing her class on Zoom. And Rena Phillips was doing her Pilates class on Zoom. And I said, well, I have something to share, too. So I started doing my senior class on Zoom. So, and that's what I mean, friends who support each other and encourage each other to continue learning and growing. And that's, you know, that's what I love about our circle, is a lot of us, we still keep in touch, and we encourage and support each other, you know,
well,
to move forward in doing what we do.
These are absolutely wonderful women. Maybe one day both of them will consent to come back on, and we'll have a whole panel about dance again.
That would be wonderful.
Yes, it will be. You know, I never stop plugging for the show and never stop plugging for people who I think they have stories that people should know about, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's absolutely, you know, important, and I'm so happy that they called in, got through, because the panel is full there. Thank you very much. And really wanted to share with you, particularly my Pied Piper, the moment about dance. But Daryl also and Julia also, these are women, you know, I guess I am one of those people, I get inspired being around you all because you all are such wonderful disciplinarians. You're so devoted to what it is that you like to do. And I'm so impressed with you all of the time. Now, did I miss someone? I'm trying to think. I think, wait a minute, let me go. Let me see. Hold on a second. Hello, did I miss you?
Hello, it's Tamara Tooney.
Tooney, hey.
Hey, I just wanted to pop in and just say thank you, Mamie. Thank you for being the beautiful person that you are. I mean, I remember being in Frank Hatch's class when you first came down from Springfield and started dancing class.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, who is this woman with this body and these legs? But I just want to thank you for your classes that you have offered online. As Julia said, they have helped me so much. And you, I'm a nocturnal person. I stay up late, and I don't get up early unless I'm being paid.
Right, right.
If I'm doing a movie or a TV show or I got to do, like you said, Good Morning America or whatever,
right.
I get up. But you have been offering your 6:30 a.m. workout class these past few days.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, I pulled the trigger at the last minute to say, yes, I'll come. I'll be there at 6:30. And I just want to thank you for that because you're the only person who could get me up at 6 o'clock in the morning to work out.
I love it. I love it. And you know what? That's why I have to be on point because I feel like if anybody's getting up that early, you better start on time and you better have it together. You know, I would not do that to you all.
It is on point. It's a great class. It is.
But yeah, that's who you are, man. You're always on point. So
I just wanted to say thanks.
I love listening to the program. Thank you, Lenny, for having Mamie on. And God bless you both. I'll see you in class.
Thank you
so much.
I'll see you in the morning.
See you in the morning.
All righty. Yep.
Well, I tell you, it's one of those things that's really, really evident how people care for you, how they have loved you over time. And it's really great, Mamie. Now, we're down to the last, like, minute, and I just want to make sure that I have gotten everybody in. And I may have missed – no, I think I've gotten everybody. I think I've got everybody on here, just making sure. Okay. The hands don't go down when it's finished, so – So I have to really make sure that I've let me just see. I'm just gonna check. Hello, did I get you before?
No, this is my first time.
Okay. Well, we've
Can
got
you
only
hear me?
A couple
I'm just...
minutes. Yes. So please.
Okay. I won't take a lot of time. Mamie, this is Greer Cooper.
Hi, Greer.
Hi. And I just wanted to say real quick, first of all, I think the Lord people in your life just when you need them. And I was introduced to Mamie by Gail Nelson Holgate, who whose husband, Annie Holgate, was a musical director for a showcase that I pulled together. That's how I found out about your classes. And what I appreciate about you so much is that you are patient and considerate of the audience, and that so that those of us of a age can move our bodies doing so. And I pretend that I'm in the cast of a Broadway show when I'm in your class.
Oh, thank you. I have such a good time with you all. You have no idea. Like, you give so much to me, and everybody's saying what I give, but you all give me purpose. You know, give me reasons to get up and put a routine together and say, okay, everybody's talking about their, you know, they want to work on this part of their body. Let me pull that together. Let me figure this out. Let me figure out tempos that are, that'll work for everybody. So you all help me and you give me purpose to move forward. And I appreciate you all so much. You have no idea.
I'm going to have to cut you ladies short because we have less than a minute left.
Okay.
And I want you all to join us on the webinar. If you go to Facebook, the link is there. We're going to continue this conversation on the webinar. It's on Facebook, on Mamie's page and on my page. But right now, we're going to have to say thank you very much for tuning in to Lenny Godfrey's Straight No Chaser. And I'll see you next week where we have a wonderful guest, Jermaine Goodson. Another wonderful dancer is coming in.
Oh, I love Jermaine. Fabulous tap dancer.
All right, and here we go. I'll see you next week, everyone.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Everybody's got the fever. This is something we all know. Fever.